Today, we're examining the new glucose management indicator and the latest in glucose technology. My guest is Dr. Grazia Aleppo. She's a professor of medicine and the director of Northwestern Medicine Diabetes Training and Education Program. Dr. Aleppo, please tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to Northwestern Medicine.
Thank you for having me today. I joined Northwestern in 2007, and I've been working mainly with diabetes patients. And when I started working at Northwestern, my goal was really to establish a diabetes education program and also offer our patients with diabetes the newest therapies available and the advances. I've always had a passion for diabetes, especially for diabetes and technology. And so I had this wonderful opportunity to develop a diabetes and technology program. And so we've been able to offer our patients insulin pump therapy, the newest continuous glucose monitoring systems. And in fact, we have become one of the largest adult programs in Illinois. And I think we're very successful. We offer our patients a lot of choices to make hopefully their life easier with diabetes.
Tell us the latest developments in diabetes technology today. What's the role of CGM in diabetes management?
So diabetes technology has made really leaps and bounds in the last 2 years. And the ultimate goal really is to try to automate insulin delivery controlled by CGM. And so CGM, really, the role of CGM in this is critical because it has allowed patients to really have a full view of their glucose level, look at the trend in real time, whether on their phones or in their insulin pump. But also with the trend arrows, they can determine the direction of their glucose levels. And they can take action, so let's say, they see a glucose level which is trending down, they can make immediate action by knowing that they should avoid going hypoglycemic when the past didn't have this opportunity before. And so a patient now is in charge. They really can have feedback immediately from all sorts of life events, whether exercise, whether stress, whether they're sick, but also gives the physician, the clinicians, a lot of data to really help guide some medication adjustments or even assist the patient in some lifestyle changes, for example. So the role of CGM in diabetes management, there are basically two types of CGM we use today. One is called the personal CGM, where the patients own their tools and they use it day to day. And the professional CGM, which we also call diagnostic, which is used in clinical practice, is exactly a diagnostic tool to better understand the patient's glucose trends and patterns, especially when you have, for example, hemoglobin A1c that doesn't really match the glucose level, or the patient reports some hypoglycemic episodes that we cannot see in the blood glucose level from the traditional self-management of blood glucose monitoring. So when we look at the retrospective data, we can actually see time in range, time in hypoglycemia, time in hyperglycemia, and we can actually calculate the glucose management indicator, or GMI, based on the glucose sensor or the preceding 2 weeks. So you use the CGM in many different ways, whether personal or professional, but the beauty is it gives us a lot of information and takes the guessing work out of the way.
Isn't that amazing? All this technology today. Dr. Aleppo, what are some of the significant barriers to the use of self-monitored blood glucose?
So that's what we had so far in the past. You know, we could have the patient check their glucose and see where the level was. But besides not being really painless, and I'm sure it's not so painless at the end, it gives only a point in time to the patient. So it does not take into consideration that the glucose level change throughout the day. So the patient checked the glucose by finger stick. All they can tell is the glucose level is a particular level right now. But they don't know if the glucose level in the last hour, for example, was stable, was going up or down. And that's important because the direction with which the glucose is changing can change significantly what the patient would do. Whereas if you just check the glucose by finger stick without CGM, you only know the glucose level in the point in time. And that's it.
Well, it certainly gives the patient more control over their own health. Dr. Aleppo, what type of patient can be on CGM and what does the patient have to have tried to be eligible?
So again, for CGM for personal use, it's covered by commercial insurances for even by Medicare for patients who use multiple daily injections of insulin or insulin pumps, regardless whether they have type 1 or type 2 diabetes. In fact, CGM is covered sometimes even for patients who are not on insulin, for example, but this is really based on the patient personal insurance, and it's very difficult to find out ahead of time. But patients can have in a greater number a professional CGM done actually quite often. And again, the majority of patients in this case will be on insulin, but sometimes, again, based on some insurances, they can also have a diagnostic CGM, whether they are on some oral medication or some injectable, they are not insulin. But one has to take this case by case. Now, the real problem is that cost is often an issue, although I expect the cost to go down because of the further advances with the technology. Unfortunately, one group that is still doesn't have access to CGM is a patient on a Medicaid, and many Medicaid programs in the country do not cover CGM at this time, and that's very concerning, especially for those patients who might have an increased risk of hypoglycemia or loss of consciousness, who could really benefit from using this tool. So that's a concern that I have.
Recently, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration determined that the nomenclature of the estimated A1C needed to change. Why was that, and why was a new name for EA1C needed?
Well, that's when the fun part starts. So many CGM reports in the past had included something that was called estimated A1C, which was calculated from the actual sensor data. So this was converting the glucose averages from the CGM into a formula and was given a value that was similar to the laboratory measure hemoglobin A1C. However, very often or sometimes these two values did not match and the clinicians were confused or even worse, were frustrated. Now, why is it they don't match sometimes? So in an article that was published maybe a year ago, by Dr. Beck, you could see that for a patient with an A1C of 8% measured in the laboratory, this person could have a CGM measure mean glucose between 155 and 220, which would be very different hemoglobin A1C level measured in the laboratory. And so this was causing a lot of confusion. And so the FDA said we need to make a change in the name to avoid and end this confusion.
How interesting. So explain a little bit about the new definition of glucose management indicator for diabetes, why GMI was selected as the new name. Tell us about this new name and how it was selected and what the benefits of it are.
So the term GMI really is intended to convey that this is a measure from glucose values more than laboratory measure hemoglobin A1C. It really gives you an indication of the person's glucose management, but the choice of the name was actually made to indicate that this was coming from glucose, not from a blood draw, which is the actual hemoglobin A1C. So when we were trying to figure out this new name, we couldn't use A1C because it was confusing. We couldn't use estimated either because, again, it was confusing. So two main terms were selected. One was glucose management indicator, and the other one was glucose control indicator. We sent this nomenclature to the T1D Exchange Clinic Network, which is about 80 clinics across the United States, to give some comments and suggestions. And so at the end, the suggestion was to remove the word control because it has it could be perceived as negative or judgmental. And so that's how the term glucose management indicator came about.
How is it calculated, doctor?
Okay, I'm no statistician here, but I'll try to make it easy. So it's basically a formula that includes a combination of mean glucose concentration from CGM data versus a simultaneous measure hemoglobin A1C in the laboratory. And this was this data was gathered from about 530 patients from four different clinical studies that were using the latest CGM system available and most accurate ones. And that's how this equation was generated. And this actually is available online. If you just put in the search GMI, very often you will get this glucose management indicator formula where you can calculate the GMI from the CGM data.
How can providers understand and explain GMI if they choose to use GMI as a tool in diabetes education or management? What would you like them to know about explaining this to their patients?
So this would be very helpful, for example, if a patient is having a diagnostic professional CGM procedure, the healthcare provider can generate the GMI from the data. And they should also compare the hemoglobin A1C done at the visit, which is usually done by a finger stick, and compare the two. So it's very helpful for the clinician to explain to the patient that the A1C is a population-based tool that has multiple factors affecting it, anemia, glycosylation levels, red cell turnover, or even age of the red blood cells, whereas the GMI is calculated solely based on the patient's personal glucose level via the CGM over, let's say, 2 weeks of data. So if a patient has a higher GMI than the A1C, the patient might have anemia or a lower glycosylation level, but in this case, the glucose level in the CGM are higher, and so is the GMI. And so in this case, one wants to look at the data in the CGM to say, okay, if the glucose levels are actually higher than the A1C, we can make intervention or modification to the regimen and so adjust the hyperglycemia down and increase the time spent in normal glycemia. So we call it target range. The opposite is true if you have a GMI that is much lower than an A1C. So in this other case, when the GMI is much lower, the clinician wants to really verify from the CGM data, from the reports, that there is no excessive time spent in hypoglycemia. And so when you look at the GMI, you want to look also beyond the GMI to make sure that whatever is in these reports gives you information as far as time spent in target range, which is 70 to 180 milligram per deciliter, or time spent in hypo or hyperglycemia. And so adjust the therapy based not just on the GMI per se, but the other data, and compare the GMI to A1C to make appropriate medication changes.
As we wrap up, what should providers know and take forward to help their patients on how to interpret GMI and use it most effectively in their clinical practice?
Best thing to do is if a physician or healthcare provider has access to CGM data, they should calculate GMI and compare it to the hemoglobin A1C. And then once they've done that, if there is a concordance, then means that they really are very similar. So they can use either or. But if there is a big difference, then this time is for CGM to really shine and give the reason for the hypoglycemia or the hyperglycemia. So basically, the A1C gives you only an average, but the CGM, in addition to GMI, gives you all the dynamic trends of the day and shows you where there are areas of more hypoglycemia or more hyperglycemia. And so by understanding what's beyond the GMI, and with the report, you can make educated interventions for the patient. So comparing is important, but also when there is discrepancy, understanding where the discrepancy is by using the CGM data to help you out.
It's great information. What a fascinating topic. Dr. Aleppo, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your incredible expertise in this area of technology and glucose monitoring. Thank you again. This is Better Edge, a Northwestern Medicine podcast for physicians. For more information on the latest advances in medicine, please visit nm.org. That's nm.org. This is Melanie Cole. Thanks so much for tuning in.